Welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Robin Scott, drinking aged man of war from Scott's cellar from Clarendon Hills in Australia, their 2010 Clarendon Grenache. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, I'm joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
Rob, it's good to be here. How are you this evening?
I am gassy. No, I'm fine. Well, I am gassy, but, you know, it's drinking Sauvignon Blanc will do that to you.
Yeah, well, let's get to it.
I had a shitty dinner, actually, but that's all.
You know, you've just been kind of shitty.
I ate a brew dog and it was disgusting earlier.
Really?
Yeah, it was awful.
What'd you have?
A burger.
It was awful?
Everything was awful.
Brew dog's food usually good?
Brew dog's food sucks a big dick.
Well, you had one bad experience.
It was awful.
We've had none of my good experiences food-wise there before now. Before.
Their food is terrible.
You remember...
They have a chicken sandwich called Cluck Norris. Did you know that?
That they can't do that.
They did it.
That's our friend's product.
I know. They have it. So, Cluck Norris, chicken sandwich.
We're going to have to talk to Gibby.
Yeah, you know. Nevertheless, on tonight's show, Scott has pulled out an old wine from his cellar. And it's something that many years ago, Scott and I did a wine from this winery and the same grape. But I think we did a different vineyard from them. It was a single vineyard. So, this is the lower end the lower end version of their stuff. What we did before was the Clarendon Hills Hickenbothen Grenache. And that is the next, that's another echelon up from what we're drinking tonight. This is the Clarendon Hills Clarendon Grenache.
I think they're very similar in price points.
No, it was,
I think this was 35.
That's 29.
I think it was 35.
It says 29 on the back.
It does say 20. I think, and the other one is 39. So it's
about 40. Yeah. I paid 42 or 43 many years ago.
I think I've got a Higginbotham that's $39.99.
Remember though how they changed when you bought that stuff? That was the winemaker was gone. See, Clarendon Hills was a little more bespoke back in the day. Well, it's not the same thing currently.
No, I think what happened, he sold, but he stayed on as the winemaker.
Well, my stuff was before pre-sale. And so some of this stuff, I don't know if this is pre-sale or post-sale.
Yeah, we'll find out. I think it's post-sale. I think he sold in the late aughts.
Because what we had before was 2003. That's what that was. And it was a unique thing in the fact that when we had that Clarendon Hills, when I opened it, it was basically undrinkable. It had to actually aerate in the decanter for 3 hours or so.
This was an idiot era when we were doing way too many bottles of wine in one night. It was freaking ridiculous, and we had put it away and said, oh, it's spent.
Yeah. But in reality, it just needed more air, more time to open up, and eventually it turned into one of the more mesmerizing wines we've had. Oh, it was a 2004 vintage.
It was a life-changing experience for me because I hadn't had a wine aged like that before.
And Scott, it was $60.99. That's how much it cost. So, yeah, it was a little bit different back in the day. I'm looking at this.
My Higginbotham was.
Yeah, I'm looking down through here. Back in the early 2000s, yes, the next level up, they were 60-some bucks. Now, I don't know that this, what we're drinking now, existed then. But in those lines, they were a $60, $70 wine. That's what they cost. But this wine itself, if you look at the reviews, and I have, but I'm not going to reveal those quite yet. This is one of those things where this is towards kind of the back half of the wine's life. Is it spent? Probably no, it's not. But this is where it starts to get into those very mature years. So what we're going to experience tonight are the evolved remnants of a wine. And that's kind of what we're talking about tonight. As a wine ages, how does it change? How does it show differently? This wine is going to demonstrate a lot of those things tonight. We know what Grenache tastes like, right? We know what fresh Grenache tastes like. I mean, it's very, very common. It's very, very obvious. But what does it taste like after multiple years? And by the way, Scott, you are correct in the fact that once they sold, it was $40. But pre, it was $60. Yeah, it's weird. It took 1 year and they dropped the price like that.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It might have also been some bad years through there, so that's why they had to do that too. I don't know. But that's what this is going to be tonight. You take a wine, right? You can't buy this on the shelf currently, but you can talk about how wine ages, how wine matures, what in this wine, what elements in this wine tonight that we're going to be tasting are a product of time. You know, what can you expect to drink when you buy and set back a wine for 15 years? What can you expect at that point? Tonight, we're going to kind of go through that. The aging process of a wine, how a wine evolves, you know. Every wine evolves differently, not just varietal, not just from maker to maker. It can be also a bottle-to-bottle thing.
Absolutely.
So, how did this wine behave, okay? That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Hopefully you'll learn something from that. Maybe we'll learn something from that during our making up everything that we say.
Oh, I hope we learn something from this wine.
Scott, I'm going to teach you something. Yes.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, it's not a Clarendon Hills. It's actually from Cleveland is what I'm going to teach
Cleveland.
You. Yes.
Cleveland Heights?
No, Cleveland Steamer. Yes, it's nice.
Cleveland Steamer.
Yes. You know what that is?
Is that like a Stanley Steamer?
Yes. No, we need a glass table first, Scott, and you just crawl underneath there, and then I'll take it from there.
I'll bet you will.
I will. Oh, yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
So, folks, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. Hey, everybody. It's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So, the Clarendon Hills from 2010. Their Clarendon Grenache. I am going to read a couple reviews for this because it does have two reviews. And it's nice to know, even though, I mean, once again, it's kind of old. But the first, the lower one.
I'm sorry, I have to butt in here. This is Wilfred Wong. I actually did, Scott, review this wine. It's old. I'm old. That's just how it works. Anyway, Scott, I gave this 92 of my points. I liked it an awful lot. Kind of like you like me an awful lot.
Oh, not really.
You sent me a friendship bracelet.
That wasn't what that was.
Yes, it was. It was a zip tie, and I took it as a friendship bracelet.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Now, I found that in your back seat on the floor. Zip tie, a plastic bag, and then another zip tie, and then some chloroform. Or was it fingernail polish? I don't know. And a rag soaked in it. It's like you had a kit of some kind. Plastic sheeting was in the trunk.
Did you take a dip in it?
No. Hey, Scott, what was the box cutter for? I don't understand. Strange. I don't know. You'd line the floorboards with blankets.
For opening cases of wine.
Oh, good. That's good to know. Anyway, I gave it 92, and I said, the 2010 Clarendon Hills Grenache is about as Grenache as it gets. Yeah. The wine is so
clever.
Yeah, the wine has so much fruit, and all of its quite charming and pretty. What? The wine has so much fruit, and all of it is quite charming and pretty fine effort. Not a pretty fine effort, and pretty fine effort, like my English. Anyway, medium ruby color, raspberries and strawberries in the aromas. Really nice. Medium to full-bodied. Round and layered on the palate. Pleasingly ripe tannins. Dry, soft acidity. Nicely balanced. Attractive ripe fruit flavors. Medium finish. Smooth aftertaste. I'd pair this one with roast chicken. No, I use so many semicolons and commas just randomly in that review. It's amazing. It's like I knew how they would actually be properly placed.
Well.
It's almost quaint that I would think I know that. Anyway, then,
sorry, this is a Southern man. I had to jump in from Wilfred. I wanted to review something tonight. I have not got to talk on the show, Scott. I understand it. You're a big fan.
Well, you
were
suspended.
Well, I was, but that's not the point. I understand you're a big fan of Scott Baio and his politics.
Well. No.
You said Charles is in charge. You like that show. You said an awful lot.
Charles is in charge?
Charles in Charge is a show. It's a sitcom with Scott Baio.
Is it funny?
Scott Baio's in it, Scott. You figure that shit out yourself.
Well, I mean, I don't watch it, Southern.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's not current. It's from the 1980s. You were 72 then, I think.
Charles in Charge?
Charles, look it up on your computer there, Scott. I promise you, it is not a gay porno film.
Yeah.
It's not, Scott.
You would know that.
I would know if it was, trust me. I'm an aficionado, but that's not the point. You know. Anyway, Robert Parker, who's so glad we followed all that with this review, he gave it 93 of his points. And he wrote, medium garnet purple in color. The 2010 Clairton Grenache opens up with notes of kirsch and red currant preserves, because a lot of people eat red currant preserves, with touches of eucalyptus and dried Provence herbs. I tried to say something French. Full-bodied and showing a great concentration of red berry and dried mint flavors, it has lively acidity, medium levels of chewy tannins, and long finish. Okay. Drink now to 2019 plus. Hopefully the plus was accurate, because this is plus. 5 years plus. A 93 plus, though, because Parker was into the plus sizes then. The big ones. Romy. Scott is looking up Charles in Charge currently.
No, so
he's watching some videos about it.
Trying to find out when the winery was sold, and I don't have a date on this. There's a Australian wine and spirit merchant site, and it shows that he still owns it.
Maybe he does. He changed something significantly,
Well, it's definitely distributed by Benchmark Wines. Again, I think an Australian corporation, but that doesn't mean that they own it. I thought previously we'd seen, his name is Roman Bratasiak, who, by the way, is originally from Ukraine. And his story was he was a government worker, a government employee for the government of Australia.
Spy.
Retired and bought this winery and pulled a Turley on it, brought it back from the dead, and self-taught himself French winemaking techniques, including his own method of characterizing the quality of the grape in making a Grand Cru class, more table wine, and it breaking it down by the quality of the grape. But I thought he had sold it. I'm not seeing that.
Maybe he didn't. Maybe you're wrong.
Well, wouldn't be the first time we got something wrong.
I didn't say that. You did.
Oh, Lord.
So, I never thought to begin with. I just letting you hang yourself on that one. You know?
Yeah. Who owns Clarendon Hills now? We previously talked about it being sold, and the price is changing after the sale. I think you missed when you said that.
Well, I was just going along with you, but the prices did change abruptly, significantly, and so did the ranges. They reduced the number of things that they made, as far as I can see, and the prices went down by $20 or $30 a bottle.
Now, I'm looking on their Australian website. There's no prices that are down here.
Well, but now we're looking at like that snippet of late 2000s into the teens. I don't know what they're not selling it on wine.com anymore.
No.
I don't know what a current Clarendon Hills goes for. I don't know at all.
It'll pop up occasionally when they changed it and we don't have the distribution in Ohio. You rarely see it now, but
yeah. I mean, I know Astralis is still like $300, but
you don't even see it anymore.
No, but it's still out there. It's still out there.
You know what you're going to find a joy? Sticking in your nose in this thing.
It smells like a thin mint. It's chocolate and mint. That's the strongest, one of the stronger mint noses that I've smelled.
I'll tell you what else is back in there. That Greek. Licorice anise
Greek
thing. Yeah. It's like anise paste.
Yeah, that's the thing. Now, onto the aged thing. This has very, very concentrated aromas. Very. Man.
It might mean it's not decanted long enough.
Well, we're gonna continue to swirl our glasses to try to aerate this wine as much as possible, but it has very intense aromas. And what's unusual here, the mint is so strong. But beyond that, like Scott was saying, that black licorice Greek background is so strong. Yeah, you said almost like the currant paste.
Like a paste, yeah.
Condensed, very, very, very potent aromatics. But all slightly, what's a good term? I'm going to say guttural, but, you know, hard, you know, rustic. Off-putting to some people. We know that there's
rustic. Brash.
Brash, yes. Rustic, brash, whatever you want to call it. It's all there. And it's something that would be extremely off-putting to a novice wine drinker starting off right now. It'd be like if you pulled out a Chateauneuf or a Pinot, a classic Pinot, and you smelled a lot of mushroom and barnyard.
This is what I would expect from an aged Chateauneuf, something, a big nose.
Well, there's, in a general sense, you're smelling funk. Funk is there. It's a funky wine, you know, which isn't surprising with the age and the grape.
Grenache. It's
Grenache. Grenache does this sort of thing. Now, in Chateauneuf, you're going to have multiple other grapes, 10, 12 other grapes, that are going to also influence how that goes, right? Here, you're just talking about Grenache.
This is straight varietal.
Now, this winemaker, though, does have a French take on things. So anything that ages is going to have that same mentality. They're going for, he doesn't shy away from something that's barnyardy or has funk to it, because that's what he likes. That's what he wants you to taste. That's what you get here. So
it's starting to show brackishness, but it's not straight on brackishness. Like, it's way past its due time.
But moving on, yes, as you're saying, the brickishness.
It's just starting
because it's still it's a darker ruby purplish. But yeah, right on the edge.
Just a hint of that. And older wines, we talk brickishness. There's just a hint of brown.
Right around the edge.
And this one's, I wouldn't even describe it as brickish. If you didn't know this was an older wine, you wouldn't look that hard.
No, you wouldn't.
But it's there. It's starting to show.
Mm-hmm.
Which for me is a good sign that it's not gone too far. But we'll see.
Yeah, so if this was tawny colored, if it was had a little bit of an orange tint to it, slightly rust colored, we know that this just, you just need to pour it out. Now,
how dare you?
Well, you would. The nose, though, overall, the one thing you'd say, despite the type of aromas, it's slightly porty on the nose. Slight port element.
Fair. Let's just do it. Let's just go in. Wonderful legs.
Mm-hmm. And we're drinking these out of the Old World Syrah glass.
Beautiful in the glass. Mm-hmm. Look at those legs, man.
Oh, yeah.
Look at how long and big and slow to develop.
Mm-hmm. And the Old World Syrah glass is the same glass you drink a Chateauneuf out of. So,
yes, please. I'll say this. You know this is aged.
Uh-huh.
It's got wonderful texture. You don't expect an aged wine to be full-bodied, and this has leaned out. I would guess that when this was young, it was a big, full-bodied beast of a Grenache.
Yeah.
And it has aged really nicely. It shows, I'm going to say, red meat that I love.
The problem, though, here for me is because some of the body has fallen away a little bit, it's showing a core of tar, asphalt, whatever you want to call it. And streaks right down the middle that hopefully is going to blow off in a little bit because that mars it. And that
does
is an
it?
Yeah, it does.
I don't think it's too much.
It's too much. I think it's gonna dissipate and blow off as we drink a little more and it gets a little more air. Normally things like that are normally products of a little bit of a sulfuric edge to it that will lessen as it breathes. Opens up. Mm. Normally those kind of off-putting flavors, you just need to give it a little more time. If that backs off, goes away, then it's an older, you know, here's the thing. It does have a nice mouthfeel, but it's a slightly bit powdery. It comes across a little bit powdery because of the fact it's just breaking down a little bit more as a wine. It's not a bad thing. If it's not something if you don't like mature wines, you might not like that flavor. Certain wines from certain regions don't do that. French Bordeaux doesn't do that. Normally cab-based stuff doesn't do that. Mm. It's either sleek and good or you don't drink it. Other grapes, Shiraz, Syrah, Grenache, those grapes, they do get into this little thing where you get more of a rustic farmhouse kind of feel to it, where this wine, you know, when it was in its youth, like Scott said, probably was more mildly undrinkable because it was so intense and big. But now it gets this little this rustic kind of element to it where you either like that or you don't. But this wine has a little bit of that rustic charm that's still there. We'll see, though, on that tar that runs in the middle, if it'll dissipate for us so we can taste more of it. And that doesn't surprise me, partly because I've had other things, and this is just based on this. I've had other wines right now that are older, like this, that start off that way, that does mellow. The ones that are bad, right, the ones that are bad, that don't do anything, are hollow. Okay, you know it's passed when you have a hollow front palate. Sometimes it's from corking as well, but yep. But also when a wine is gone, that happens as well. So I don't taste a hollow front palate, so that's good. It just needs to probably relax, breathe a little bit to kind of let go of that. Maybe there's a little bit of cassis into that if it lets go. There's definitely a little bit of a dark chocolate, ganache, Gorique, that kind of stuff is definitely under there, maybe a little bit. This, though, needed to be open and drank, too, because it's not too far from probably falling apart. Right now, it's still holding itself together, but you could see if you let it go for another year, year and a half, you start seeing, you know, it's like a skeleton where it's kind of held by wires and all of a sudden half the jaw starts flying off, just kind of shuffling around like a zombie. You know, it starts zombified. Then you see, oh, there, it loses, a finger drops off. You know, you're like, what's going on? this wine isn't there yet, but you can see down the road, you see where it goes into zombie land. You're like, okay, well, at that point, that's a bit more of a dice toss on this wine. Don't go there.
Go back in and see what you think. Oh, you were overwhelmed by the tar.
I intend to. There it is. It's still there, but it's going back in the background. This wine is, man, 10 years ago, good luck. You would have been on the fucking floor with this thing. It would just be so big and strong. This is an ox of a wine. I wish we had it 5 years ago. I think 5 years ago would have been so great. Because that mid palate wouldn't have hollowed out a little bit. Right now, there's this massive amount of, dark chocolate, cassis, prune, black currant kind of element on that front palate. And it's very large. Very large. Large frame on that front palate. As it goes, though, towards the mid, then it starts losing some of that steam and it's washing out a little bit because it just 5 years ago, there would have been probably a crescendo there that would have made this thing just a fucking, it would have been a rocket ship. I mean, I don't know 10 years ago, whether or not we would have even, we're like, put the cork back in that thing. It would be just so thick, so much. Which is surprising because you'd think something that would be that big, which it was, could do more than 14 years. You'd think it would. Because they said 2019 plus, so they were only given a 10-year window on this wine, and it was so big out of the gate, had to have been.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising.
I like the mid palate for that red meat or like raw steak thing. The finish, I really love the oak on the finish. So soft. And it's long and the oak is there. And it's almost subtle the way the oak comes across. It's a beautiful example of oaking calming down with a wine. And you only get that from somebody who treats the wine properly with the right amount of time in the barrels, quality oak. This is growing on me. I hear what you're saying of where is it at in its bottle's life.
It's past.
I think this.
5 years
ago.
I
think this needs maybe another hour in the decanter.
Well, it's not going to hurt it. I don't think that's going to... It'll be interesting to see what happens. And I don't think bad things will happen. Because already, a little more oxygen and that tar dissipated and faded into the background.
Quickly.
Which helps. I mean, that's good. That's a good thing.
Well, and that was our first pull.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I was cautioning that. It is melding a little bit. And that's the thing. It just needs to meld and, Scott also keeps his stuff in his back seat of his car, so that's probably...
Oh, stop.
it's a testament, by the way, to this winery. And this was kind of after they started. They weren't doing quite as intense stuff at this point. At least more expensive stuff they weren't. And it just kind of goes to show, this doesn't taste Australian, which is kind of fascinating. If you're blind tasting this, you're putting this, obviously, in the throes of France. And you're thinking this is from one of the better appellations in Rhone. You're going to know it's southern, so you're going to say this is like an older Vacross or not Chateau Neuf because it doesn't have enough elements there, but what are some Gigonas, you could say it's that, or Gigondas, or I don't know, anything that, so that's the problem you get into, because anything that is grander is going to be northern Rhone, is going to be Syrah predominantly. Because this kind of reminds me of the Augustus Klopp. the Coronas we had years ago. That's Syrah, but it was old like this. Now, it's
what does a character from Willy Wonka have to do with drinking wine?
Augustus Glop.
Isn't he the fat kid's dad?
I don't know. I never really liked that movie that much.
Which version of it? Now there's another version.
The original. It just kind of freaked me out. I don't know.
The original?
Yeah.
I thought that Johnny Depp one freaked me out.
I didn't watch that. I mean, if I didn't like... I like Gene Wilder. I always have. And I like him. But... And I know it's a classic, great movie. I don't like at all, though, the scenes that don't involve him. So, like, the kid and his grandfather.
What?
Man, throw them down the well. I don't give a shit. It's
what is wrong with you?
You want to see Gene Wilder.
It's humanity. It's the humanity of the movie.
I don't have that.
Charlie gets his grandpa, who hasn't been out of bed in, what, 50 years, to go with him. He got the golden ticket. Robbie won the golden ticket.
Mm.
And grandpa went with him.
It's so exciting.
And it was great.
It was great. They got the they got the chocolate factory.
And yes, Gene Wilder's in the scene. But at the end, when grandpa curses him out,
mm-hmm.
says, go to hell. Yeah. Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
And then Charlie gives him the great gobstopper back.
Gobstopper.
Yeah. He gives it back.
I know.
Gene Wilder says, Charlie, my boy.
Yeah. Actually, first he said, you get nothing.
That's what he says to grandpa.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It does matter.
Doesn't matter.
It's a great moment.
I didn't say it wasn't.
It's a great moment in a great movie. But does that freak you out?
Well, the rest of it. Does Oompa Loompas?
The Oompa Loompas?
Just
the orange skin?
Yeah, I don't like that.
Well, you liked it in a president.
No, I didn't.
You like it in an ex-president.
No.
Why does Scott always try to deflect? Everybody knows what he's like and what he likes, you know. He likes this wine because it's old like him, you know. And it's kind of sour like him, you know. It kind of tastes like Scott made it himself with his feet. I don't know, maybe.
I've made some good wines.
You said that, yes. No one's tasted any of our wines.
Yeah.
Who? It is still alive. Let me rephrase that.
You love that.
No, that was disgusting.
I had the worst of the worst left. All the good ones.
Why won't you drink it? You're like, what goes wrong? Just drink the tea I put in the cup. Why don't you trust me? Scott's so fucking stupid. He's like, drink blind the wine. Tasting. And I got the blind tasting completely right. Because it was Pinot Grigio by who the fuck knows. And I pegged this Pinot Grigio.
It was a white Zin that I'd made.
But you brought...
Oaked it with... pieces, parts.
You tried to do two things. You first had a real wine that was a Pinot Grigio, and I identified it as Pinot Grigio, which is shocking because I don't really drink Pinot Grigios, but I know what they taste like, so whatever. And then...
It was close. It was a Riesling. You called it Pinot Grigio.
It was a Pinot Grigio. It was made by your company that makes all the nasty stuff, the Primitivo and crap like that.
Oh,
back when you were buying that Trader Joe's stuff.
Who does...
They're the king of Chianti.
Who was that?
Because Mike Pence likes their Pinot Grigio because, you know...
Well...
You know, he's got to keep his urges down. What is that? And then we had their Chianti on, and it was corked. The bottle was fucking corked to hell. The king of Chianti. They call themselves the king of the Chianti. What's that called?
Selezion, that's
not no, there's no Grand Slip. No, it's
Let's put in this Trader Joe's. They had such sexist whipping.
Oh, it was stupid. I mean, you always drank that shit.
We that's not it.
No, it's by they have the Primitivo, Chianti. I don't think they reserve it.
Maybe they don't make it anymore.
Well, that's a damn shame.
It would be a damn shame.
Yeah, and poor Mike Pence.
Here, let's see here.
It's right on the tip of my tongue, but I can't.
I'll bet.
Yeah. It's... Regardless, it was this line.
What was it called?
Yeah.
And you, Kings of Prohibition.
Green Fan. Graphone.
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 Yeah. Yeah, the Graphone. And Scott originally had the Primitivo from them. And
we drank it
for a little while. It wasn't it was like $6. It was fine. It was okay. But it got bad.
We drank a lot of it.
Yeah, it got real bad.
Before we were podcasting, Deb and I.
Yeah.
And then it actually got worse. They raised the price on it, and that's when it got worse.
Mm-hmm. And the rest of their stuff was just ghastly. So, you know, but yeah, it all got real, real bad.
The Primitivo was good. Again, we love Zins. I love Zins. And mm-hmm. Primitivo equals Zinfandel.
Well, when we genetically started, proven. But when we started the show, we were buying a lot from Trader Joe's.
We weren't intentionally. I was because, yeah, at the time, Trader Joe's had a reputation for good wines, and we proved that
self-proclaimed.
Wrong.
Self-proclaimed. Yeah, yeah. We, as you can tell, we don't have anything from Trader Joe's on the show anymore. We haven't had it in a long time. We don't intend to either. They don't have anything that you want to drink. I mean, Kirkland Signature. Yeah, there's some stuff from Costco that is good, but fuck, not. But that Trader Joe's nothing. I mean, we've tasted a bunch of different stuff. Nothing.
I just stopped trying for sure. There were a couple things we liked. Corvelia, maybe we liked.
What?
I had a in profile woman with her hair pulled up. White label with the black caricature of the person.
I don't know that.
Yeah. There was another one. Excuse me. Pardon me. Doesn't matter. Let's get back to this wine.
No, no.
I am enjoying this wine immensely.
You're not drinking very much.
I'm pounded more than you have.
Mm. Yeah. This is the thing. If you're going to set out to age a wine, okay, first of all, consider what you're buying. Realize you need to like the varietal as well. You don't have to. I mean, there's no reason to worry about have I ever had a mature wine? You're going to eventually once that thing reaches that peak. But, you know, don't expect necessarily to like everything that you age. It's not, that's just not the way it is. And you don't do that. You don't because you're guessing. But that's okay. Sometimes you know. But for the most part, you're guessing. And a wine like this, this wine.
This was a guess. This was lower price point.
This is lower price point.
High quality maker.
Mm-hmm.
Did it go too long? It's not. Spent?
No, it's not spent.
Is it past prime drinking? We'll never know because
we don't know what prime drinking was. But
we don't know what it was. I think Rob is suggesting that it might have been a couple years earlier.
Yes, it was. It definitely
reasonable.
If I think that you're going to have a little bit different product if it was 2020, 2021. That's a long time ago, but that's what I see. I think that it would fill out more. The whole wine would be represented in those years. That being said, I don't think that it would have degraded that quickly in like 1 year, right? So it could be a thing where, yeah, this probably prime, the window might have been 2016 to 2020. But that being said, this wine is so large, even in its current form of what's there, you're thinking a wine that was that big that only really had that short of a window? That's strange. Because that is strange. I mean, a wine like that should have enough elbow room. And a Grenache is an ageable grape to really show. When we did the Hickenbach, now mind you, that's a higher range. That is.
It is.
It's just more expensive wine. A lot more expensive wine. But same premise. It was 2017. So it would have been about the same age that this is in relative. So,
we found it undrinkable and then mm-hmm. came back to it about 2 hours later.
Yeah.
And it's a wine. It was a life-changing experience for me when it comes to wine, because it was the first time I'd had something that had been aged, and it was just so completely different from anything I'd ever had. But I think part of it was because I saw the benefit of decanting for 2 hours. And I remember it was brown. It was brickish. But then once it blew off, and I don't remember why we tried it. I don't remember why we tried it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, went back to it is what I mean.
This is the thing also. I think a lot of these old wines, say like when we did the Pinot Canet, or some of the older Chateauneufs we've done, or that Clarendon Hills, the Hickamauvin. Normally in those cases, even though they're stored properly, the corks are shambles when you pull them out. This cork was just like it was a brand new wine. I didn't think about it when I was doing it, but it had no problem pulling out. There was no separation, nothing. It was perfectly fine. The cork was as if it was new. So that's a good thing.
Somebody must have a good space and know how to store wine. I don't know who that would be.
Well, you have this in you offshoring this or something?
Must have been me.
Some of the Vivino's wine storage areas. That climate control out of here.
Just in my basement.
Is this next to your porthole?
It's just on the other wall.
Oh.
The Clarendon Hills. The concrete wall. And Kay Vintner's are top shelf just as you walk in.
Oh, okay. Okay. It's up high where the heat is. That's good.
Actually, my room is well mixed, the temperature range. There's not a higher temperature range in there. I insulated the top of the room very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about a new product. Well, new app that is on the market today that I really think that you should check out.
You're milking your prostate again?
That's called masturbating, Scott.
No, you're milking. That's a different thing.
It's not when you do it.
What?
When
Scott, your hand milking is on your the penis. Prostate is masturbating. I don't know. It's not something you're doing for medicinal purposes. Even though you have your hand up your ass, you're just calling you. You know what, Scott? A, it's not puppetry. I know you called it that one time. It's not that. And B, it's not medical purposes. You're just a degenerate pervert, and you're sticking your hand up your ass for masturbational purposes.
Depends whether your health insurance pays for it or not.
Even if you, like, say, watch this. I'll drink water while I have my hand up my ass, and I'll make sounds like I'm a ventriloquist. I looked at you, like, very confused for...
You know, your voice sounds like you're a ventriloquist.
For like 3 minutes.
Rob, where's your hand?
And I'm thinking...
What are you doing?
Scott's still doing it.
What's that piece of stainless steel in your hand?
And it's like 5 minutes on. And then he's like, watch this. And it's like, well, Scott, you just spit the water out. Why is your hand still in your... It was just a bizarre thing. He's like, you know, I think that this is going to be a popular act. I think I'll do it at different places. Like, I don't know, nursing homes, schools. I'm like, whoa. Yeah, do it, Scott. He's, you know. Then again, I mean, in reality, it's still a better show than what most of, like, Mark Dunham or that Dunham guy does, Jeff Dunham.
Oh, Jesus.
It's not as racist, that's for sure.
Well.
Although he did make some inappropriate Holocaust jokes while he was doing it, but that's not, I don't know. It's odd. Is that in a character if you have your hand up your ass? And you're claiming to be a puppet.
Well,
I was so mesmerized by the whole, you know, thing about it. Look at me, I'm my own puppet. La la la. Well, I'm a ventriloquist. I was like, no, you're not. What now? Then you're making like Holocaust jokes. I was like, I didn't even hear the Holocaust jokes. Really, I was like, what? Whoa! 5 minutes passed. I'm like, you said what? And I couldn't even really remember what you said because I'm still hung up on the fact that you called yourself your own puppet and you're a one-man ventriloquist. And I was like, this is bizarre.
Anyway, folks, we're going to take a break, but be right back here on the Wine Vault. We'll be right back. And we're back, folks. You know, Jeff Dunham should try that act. Stick his hand up his ass and call himself his own puppet. That would be great. It'd be better than a show, but, you know, just pointing that out. You'd go.
I'd go. Hey, Jeff, stick your hand up your own ass. That'd be great. Yeah. Put the puppet down. Make yourself your own puppet.
I would go see Joe Rogan again. He's funny.
Mm-hmm. He should make that joke. It's not really a joke. It's a suggestion. I really think Jeff Dunham should stick his hand up his ass and call himself a puppet.
And Joe Rogan should have a joke about it.
That's right. He would be the puppet master, and he would be the puppet. Mind blown. Be fantastic.
Mind blown. Really? It's not a big step for you now, is it, having your mind blown?
No.
It's been a hard time for you now, hasn't it?
It has been. Well, folks, what I have discovered on the Apple Store.
On the Apple Store?
Apple Store.
You've had a lot of time on your hand, haven't you?
Yeah. Trust me, I have. There is a new app called Inventory. Invintory, right? And it is a new wine cellar management app, right? Kind of like CorkZ or some of the other shitty ones that are out there. Now, there are failings and positive things about a lot of those things. But like CorkZ, that's one we used to use, or Seller Tracker is another name. And Seller Tracker and those things do a good job of market price. They do a good job of, you can scan and just enter stuff in. But they don't do a good job of where your stuff is.
You could have a system for where it is. It wasn't inherently to it.
Yeah. You can't include reviews very easily. It's all very manual, old school kind of. And the interface is a little bit dated, right? You can scan by UPC and get your wine in there, assuming it's in the system, and normally it is. That's a good thing. I don't know of any other ones that really do that, but.
Inventory doesn't do that? You can't UPC code it?
I don't believe it. No. You can take a picture. Okay, so Inventory is a new one. I had another one. It's just too difficult to use, right? But Inventory is one where you could, A, take a picture of the bottle, and it finds it for you by the label. You don't use the UPC, you use a picture of the bottle. Or you can just type in the winery name, and all the wines will just come right up. So if you want Turley, right, you would type Turley into the search function. And then it's going to find, it show all the Turleys. You just click on whatever one you want, pick the vintage, how many bottles you have. But the thing about Inventory is, you can set up your cellar, right? And this is just the free version, mind you. You can pay and they can do scans, or you can send in pictures of your wine cellar and they can like create the scans of your wine cellar and do it all custom if you want to.
Huh.
That's not all that much money to do that. So the free one, once again, you can set up all sorts of different zones for where your wine is so you can categorize it. Some of them, the reviews pull in so that you know what the review is, but you can also manually put that stuff in. You can put in how much you paid for it. You can put stuff that's in transit. It does a good job of knowing, it does a good job of finding things. And it's not too arduous to actually put everything in, right? It just is one of those things where the pain in the ass is, shit, I got to type all this stuff. You don't have to type it all in. So they have a good job of having pictures of the labels, so that's all nice.
Well, the scanning in is just nice. Critical now. Well, we've got function with our phones, and it just, there's just an inherent accuracy about it that it's just less manual. You take a picture with your phone, and it does it for you as long as you're checking.
Well, you're taking,
it enters it into the system.
This does that, though.
What's your fucking mistake?
You can take a picture of the label with your phone, and it'll find it for you. Then you can put it in. Now, one thing this does, it has winemaker notes for all the wines. It has the average price of the wine. And then it has the drink window for everything, right? It has a great deal of information about it that you can add. Then you go to the Prestige. Let me find the different levels here. I don't want to pay for it. But so, let's see. Prestige is $10 a month, right? Or $120 annually. There, you'll build out your cellar or fridge in 3D sections. So it'll actually have visuals of where every bottle is. Not just a label of, you know, left rack 120 or something like that, you'll actually have a visual of what your racks look like. You can create 20 storage locations with the free one, maybe 10 or 15. Real-time market value of everything. Track your incoming wine deliveries. I don't know how that does it, but apparently you do. Visualize your wine data collection with graphs. So basically, it's breaking down everything for you. Something that Cellar Tracker actually already does for free, but you're supposed to donate. And then for Opus, Opus is $25 a month, or I think $300 annually, maybe. You get a custom 3D replica of your cellar or fridge. Take pictures and they make one of it. Temperature and humidity sensor integration. So you can like wire it through there, so it's monitoring everything for you. Create original wooden cases. I don't know what they're about. Advanced search functionality, whatever. White glove bottle onboarding service. There you go. Who knows what that is? Personalized support. You don't gain anything basically with Opus, but the free one though. Unlimited bottles. You can add as many bottles as you want. Create up to 10 cellars or fridges. You can see wine market prices. You can import from another platform or spreadsheet. Add collaborators. I don't know what that means. You can then also you can keep track of your experiences of the wine. So you keep track of the notes of everything you drank. Wish list. You can do that. It's all very nice. Prestige is $90 a year. Opus is $300 a year. Opus, though, might be just a little bit ridiculous.
So, back to the inventory. That's the one you were talking about that you raved about. Is that the way to go, or is Opus the way to go?
I don't know. I mean, I just do the free, and I'm perfectly happy with that. But the free manages all my stuff. I know exactly how many bottles I have. I know where I'm keeping them. I know when to drink them. You know, I have this fridge. I have that fridge. I have every single rack. Every single rack I have is within that 10 limit, right? So, you know, it does everything I would like it to do, and it's not a pain in the ass about it. See, the problem was when you have ones where you can actually put it on the rack where it actually belongs. So you have this system, and you're saying I have Veuve Clicquot, and I have it in the third slot in the fourth rack, and it's right there, right? Well, say you drink that food, and then you've just got to go in and change all that shit. And that's kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass.
So, in reality, do I need to know what... I mean, I can fucking see with my fucking eyes, but, you know, but I need to get to that. If you have a 5,000-bottle cellar, though, you probably need to go to another level where you're getting a wine scanner. You're probably creating your own UPCs. Normally, you can go beyond that. This is just small... You know, 100 bottle, 500, 1 to 500 bottles. That's what we're talking about here, smaller collections. If you have a 5,000 bottle collection, you probably should invest in a computer software where you have a scan tool and every bottle that you own is UPC'd and categorized. And they have software for that where you just actually have wine category organizational software that isn't like on your phone. You actually have hardware for that. And that's what you'd need to do for that. But for this...
I think a lot of the higher end ones are going to, you scan, take a picture, and that's how you interact with the software. It just has more capabilities.
Yeah, this is a really nice one though. I was surprised. I thought it would be junk, but it does a really nice job. I was impressed. So, Vin Inventory is something you should check out. It's kind of fun. I recommend it.
Right on.
Scott, you don't use anything specific, but...
I'm just sorting it out. I'm using color coding for what's ready to drink now, and it's just as simple as that. And then, you know, I have a more dynamic storage system in that I'm moving things, so I'm trying to keep the things that are drink now mid-range, mm-hmm. You know, right in my eyes. Some of the things that aren't going to age as much, I've got those in different locations. I'm so Turley heavy and Carlisle heavy that those bottles are different shaped, so they have to have their own storage. That's a bit of a pain in the ass. It's a bit of work.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I don't care if you have a digital storage system where it's going to tell you the location. You're still going to have movement of your wine. You know, unless you have a system that has an individual location for an individual bottle of wine, most people don't build it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know my cellar. I've got that entire wall where, you know, it's nooks, you know, and it's, you can store 25 bottles in one little nook. It's so you're constantly rotating things around, right? Every time you add two bottles, you don't want to stack them to the bottom. So I've got sections that are more drink now wines, sections that are longer term. Like, for example, my Chateauneufs, I've got them kind of all organized in the same area. My Italian stuff, the Barolos and the different ageable things, I've got them in a separate area. And then, you know, I keep my California Cabs ageable in a couple different pockets. So it just depends. I wish I had built more of the shelf style, which is the secondary areas that I built. It's not as good a bang for your buck in terms of efficiency, but in terms of managing your cellar, it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got 7 across, 8 across areas, and if you pull a bottle, you don't have to move 20 other bottles. You just take a little spacer and put it, you know, where you just took the bottle out. And now I've got 6 in that row rather than 7. But live and learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. I was in the cellar tonight, put away some things and moved some stuff around, and you just putting your hands on the wine and you're looking at, oh, that one's almost ready. And that's why I called about this Clarendon Hills. I'm like, I think we're going to drink this tonight.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I just did on inventory. So when you drink a wine, then you can give it a review. All right. But it does more than that. So it has prompts. So you can go in and say, what are the sensory elements of the wine? So you're going to pick out the fruits that you taste. Right? So you can go in as you're drinking the wine and click on, like, cassis, black plum. I just did Michel Chapoutier's Petit Rocher, his Gros Hermitage, right? I just drank that on Friday. So I said, cassis, black plum, a little cigar box, black pepper, smoked meat, forest floor, Garrigue, crushed rock, right? Then structure, sweetness, bone dry, tannin, medium, acidity, low, medium, body, medium, full. Then you can give more private notes, and you can just vocally record it. So you can just tap to record. And then you complete, and you've drank it. And it remembers that. And so if you want to go back, before that it said, would you buy it again? Yes. Do you like it? Yes. I mean, and so it's kind of nice in that sense that it just gives you this a little bit of, I don't know, you can kind of categorize and remember what you had.
If it's recording audio files, that's going to end up being a pretty large system if you drink a lot of your wine.
I think it's going to be voice to text is what it's going to
okay.
be.
Okay.
That's what it looks like.
Okay.
So it's kind of nice. It's got a lot of functionality, and I think for people that are starting off that are collecting but want to remember what they taste, it gives them ability. And as they're drinking, they can figure out what they're tasting while they're doing that.
Mm.
It's kind of a nice thing. Kind of cute.
Oh, you're cute.
No. Yes, I know, Scott.
No, not you.
Yeah, no, no.
No,
no,
not you.
Somewhere out there, there's a mouse that's, you know, kind of sexy in a way. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Jesus.
Faisal was a baby mouse, though, wasn't it?
No, he was the big brother. He had a younger sister.
Was he an adult?
Not exactly.
He was a kid.
He was probably a teenager mouse.
That's inappropriate then, Scott.
Why?
Why do you lust after Faisal?
I don't.
Oh, who does?
I just sing his song. I think you do.
No, nobody does then.
Where's
Scott?
Southern Man, that's when what you need him?
Well, I'm right here, Scott. Why
don't you take care of Wilfred? Take him out back and beat him.
We're talking about cartoon animals again, aren't we?
Yeah, isn't that your favorite subject?
That could be, Scott. I mean, that Yogi Bear, he never wears pants. You never notice that, Scott? He just runs around with no pants on.
I never noticed it until you pointed it out, Southern Man.
He doesn't have those pants on. I'm thinking, well, sorry. What happened? Where am I?
Just thinking about Yogi and Boo Boo Bear.
I need to get bigger pants. That's all I know. So, folks, we're going to take a break. Be right back here on the Wine Vault. We're back, folks. So the 2010 Clarendon Hills Clarendon Grenache from Australia from many years ago. Scott, what we're going to do tonight and usually is I want you to give a rating as to what you think in its prime it would have been and then what you think it is currently. Not based on any American, just straight off. If this was a fresh wine you were pulling out right now.
Wait, so two separate things I heard.
Yeah. What do you
in
think?
Its prime,
yeah,
I think if it was aged and we hit it at its peak,
yeah.
But then you said fresh wine.
If this was, if you had no idea what the vintage was, you're just judging by what's in the glass right now, for not no provenance, no, you don't know anything about it. What you giving this?
I'm gonna defer to you in saying that. And agreeing with you that it's like slightly past its prime.
Sure. But this is kind of the exercise. How do wines degrade?
I don't know that for certain. Because our only comparison point is that wonderful bottle of wine we had from... And that's just... It's a different area. It's not the same wine. Was this past its point? This wasn't as transcendental as that wine was, but this is really good. What I really appreciate about this is just this finish on this wine, the way the oak is there, but it's almost not. It's like this kiss of oak.
Well,
and this has been here.
It's fading out, yeah.
But it's beautiful. It's silky, and the finish just. It's not the longest finish. But it's a nice, silky, smooth finish to a wine that otherwise has really calmed down. You talked about the tar. I don't know that I got that as strongly as you did from my first pull, but it's definitely calmed down. The other thing I love, once you get past and you're in the mid palate headed to the finish, there's just this kiss of... red meat off air. I talked about it, like it doesn't taste of the bread, but if you're having a steak and you just dip that bread in the steak drippings and you eat that bread, but the taste of the meat, the taste of that red blood, the taste of that dripping of the meat minus the saltiness, it's there in this wine, and I love that to some degree.
As a sanguine kind of character,
just there's just almost like you're having a steak.
Mm-hmm. What's your score?
I'm 91, and I'm gonna,
for which one,
join you in saying that it's a little past its prime, and at its prime it would have been like a 92.
You think it's only 1 point less than what it used to be?
I don't think it's fallen off that much. I think it is what it is. I think it's the entry. Well, I guess we can't say it's the entry, but of the tiers of Clarendon Hills. This is a proper Clarendon Hills. This isn't in Australia. They sell one that's like entry priced. It would be like in the teens American dollars.
Yeah, I know. It's like the Bush wine, the Clarendon Bush wine. Yeah, they used to be available.
Which would be an interesting buy.
I've not seen it in 15-20 years.
Typically, we don't like young Grenaches. I mean, Turley has a young Grenache, and it's fine.
We'll have one in the queue to drink. Scott will buy it. It's like...
Yeah, young Grenaches are fine. Grenache is made to appreciate, and we let's be honest, we like French Grenaches.
It's just that they can be just so... Yes, we like French Grenache.
We just that's what we like. And you don't see it much elsewhere. This, I'm glad I did this. If I could get my hands on it, would I buy Clarendon again? I wish I had bought Clarendon again. I wish I'd bought it like, this is what, a 2010? I wish I had a 2014, because I would try to drink it now.
Well, I mean...
Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
I would try to find out if 10 years is the right time and not 14.
Yeah, 14 is not the right time. I will say this. I think that originally, would you buy this? Yeah, you should, because this was a really good wine. If it was drank in its peak, I think it'd be a 92-ish kind of point. Maybe not 93. It depends on how well the complexity showed. Because if it's just a brick house punching you in the face, then it loses a little bit of that. So 92 points, kind of safe in the fact that it's going to have big power. It's going to be, brutish and strong. But will it have something beyond that dynamic? I don't know that. But
would it be more special?
It's going to have enough, right?
Yeah.
As it sits, there's still something here to drink.
Oh, God, it's good, man.
It's a little more intricate, and but it still can be a little bit interesting. Now, if you're just a novice drinker, don't drink this. You'll hate it. But let me finish.
And this is our thing. Grenache is our thing.
But there's something to enjoy here. It's not in the 90s. I'd say it's more in the 88 range right now, which is still a nice drink, and it's something if you get it past its prime, right? 4 years at past its prime, maybe. And now you have a wine that you're like, okay, I let it sit open for 3 hours, and I drank it, and it was interesting. And there were some things that I enjoyed, and it wasn't this big thing, but I know that it used to be, and next time I need to be a little quicker on the trigger. That's fine.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot here. And as it goes along, it tastes like a very... less like a Chateauneuf. It doesn't taste like a Chateauneuf. This tastes like a more interesting Cote de Rhone. And that makes sense because it's the same price as an interesting single commune Cote de Rhone. That's what this reminds me of. I just thought about that because we have some of those, I have a few of those things. Some single commune. The Chateau Lanerf, their single commune, Cote de Rhone. This reminds me a little bit of that. Now that's a big bastard son of a bitch. It won't go 14 years though. It'll go 3 to 4. That's all it'll do. But as of right now, because there's a lot of Grenache there.
We like that.
Yeah, that's what this tastes like. So
I've got a couple of those.
When you reconfigure your brain like that, it's like, but what you're drinking is in the same price range as XYZ. It's not in the same price range as, it's the same price range as a really, really terrible, fly-by-night, you bought it at Trader Joe's Chateauneuf. Well, then, okay. But, you can compare the Hickenbothen to a Chateauneuf because of the same price. But this isn't. This is the price of an expensive, high-end, well-done Cote de Rhone. And that's what it tastes like, and it still kind of tastes like that, way beyond a Cote de Rhone. A Cote de Rhone right now, you'd be throwing that thing in the trash. You couldn't drink it. You could not drink that. But you can this. That's kind of cool. It's a good wine. It's a good job. And, tip of the cap once again to Clarendon Hills. You're making quality products. This is not something that was intended to be aged 14 years, but it did still show something of merit after 14 years. It's good.
And I think the difference in our score is I think I appreciated the finish and the oaking better than you did. I think I gave it more credit for that.
I'm noticing more the degradation of the wine.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that. I'm just noticing a great deal more of it.
It just went past the point of prime.
It's past that. That's fine. It's still very drinkable, but in its degradation, not necessarily in a bad sense. Degradation normally means it's, but it's as it
being past its prime,
as it's sliding down the hill. It's turning into something a little bit more different. And when you consider it in that context, and you start comparing it against oranges, you know, oranges to oranges. Like a Cote d'Aron, which is what this is more like in price. Then you're like, oh yeah, well that's not so bad. That works. And I can understand how it kind of comes across. And quite frankly, out the door, if you could still buy this at $30, it's a good buy. That's a good buy, Scott.
Well, not just that, but it's like, you know, maybe the hot spot is 5 years.
Oh, by the way.
It's 14. Maybe the hot spot is 5 years.
Good luck drinking Kay Vintner's The Boy in 14 years. You won't be able to.
No. We've said
it's
that.
It's 3 years max on that one.
Yeah. We love Kay Vintner's The Boy.
But it's you can't hold it. You have to drink it.
It's just too
delicate.
It just doesn't have the body and the tannin backbone for it.
Well, it's not designed. It's not built for that. It's built for... He never intended it to be some sort of showpiece. You know, it was just, oh, yeah, we make Grenache, here it is. That's what it is. It costs what everything else he makes costs, so that's not that unusual. But he's not trying to make it some sort of, you know, amazing. I mean, when they got the score, what, the 99, was it from Suckling that gave it 99, or was it Parker? Suckling, right?
Suckling. Somebody gave it a 99, somebody didn't give it a 98.
I don't know, but I
think it was those two. I don't know what the batting order was.
Those scores are, I mean, we gave it high scores too, but our initial example though was better than our second example. Our second example was what, 10 months, a year after we had the first one.
But also we had a night of eating and drinking too.
That's true. I know. But in the first one,
and we didn't decant it either.
We just
drank it.
The first one, though, was also down here at this. I mean,
I think a decant really makes a difference on all wines.
What does? Also down here in this cellar, it's 60 degrees or 59 for the wine. That's what the wine is at, perfect cellar temperature, and it doesn't ever waver.
Talking about when you're drinking it.
And it just doesn't go up, and we're drinking it in the cellar at the same temperature. So it doesn't ever get warm down here, ever. And even when the AC was out, it never got that warm. It was still in the 60s down here. So, yeah, it's cold down here. I mean, I wish I had a jacket on, quite frankly. Because, I mean, it's 60-ish, maybe, down here right now. So, you know. But still a good wine. And, yeah, if you see Clarendon Hills out there, if you're at some sort of wine shop, yeah, buy it. Because... about all their stuff. I mean, their Syrah. We had their Syrah on the deck last summer, right? Was that a Syrah? It was a Syrah.
Was that Clarendon Hills?
Yeah, it was Clarendon Hills.
Was it the Kay Vintner?
No, it was Clarendon Hills.
It was the...
Clarendon Hills.
It wasn't last summer. That was just a little while ago I brought the Lindra. We did the Lindra. It was Lindra.
It was on the deck.
Yes, but it wasn't...
I don't know what we were doing, but we did not do the show, and we're outside on the deck. I'm not sure what was going on.
No, we were out. We just did it out when we cooked out the other night. I brought the Lindra over. It was
You did bring one over the other night, but no, this was a long time ago. Back on the deck, I think I even have a picture of it.
I don't remember it.
I
don't remember what it was. So we did the Lindra that Friday night
before we got the dog.
Yeah. Yeah, I brought the Lindra over.
This was last summer.
It honestly, that was better than this.
Yes, that was better than this.
And not just because...
What year was it, though?
Wasn't as old as this.
No, I thought it was like a 14 or something like
that. That's about right.
Yeah.
Sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a Syrah.
Yeah. The Syrah can...
And it was interesting because it was labeled Syrah on the bottle, and it's Australia, which normally they say the Shiraz.
Yes, but they... France.
He does the French thing, so... Yeah.
I don't see the picture, but I know I took a picture of the bottle eventually, but...
Last summer.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was the Clarendon Hills.
Sure, wasn't the year before?
I mean, I guess it could have been, but I don't think so. And I don't know what the scenario was, but we just hung out on the deck and drank out there. I don't know what was going on. Nevertheless.
I don't remember coming over here this summer on a weekend to doing that.
I don't even know if it was on the weekend.
It might have been a weeknight. Just came over.
Oh.
There's a lot going on in my house this year, so.
Nevertheless.
Folks. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
That's not unusual.
That's not unusual. But, bravo, Clarendon Hills. You make good products, historically. And
Rob underscores you.
That was fair.
I think you had some, I wanted it to be better and it's not in its prime, bias.
No, that's what...
You were harsh on it.
The score is what the score is, Scott. You're just...
So emotional.
The song Reminiscing, that's you. You wish, because you held it long, and it's your fault.
No.
It wasn't.
I think
you fucked it up.
I have a better appreciation of old wines than you do.
No, you have it to be more than what it is.
It's not my fault that you my lack palate it. Is you, able to pick
you
out.
You lack integrity.
The incredible qualities of an aged, well-oaked wine, and appreciate the finish. You just overlooked.
Well, I'm not saying that you can't do that. I'm just saying you didn't have that opportunity to do it tonight. So, folks, for Rob the Wine Guy and Scott the Unlicensed Taxi Driver.
10,000 comedians.
We will bid you adieu.
Out of work.
But see you next time.
Rob the Wine Guy's trying to be funny.
Ha ha. Here on the Wine Vault. Good night.